What's going on? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It is heard live every day from noon to 3 on WBT Radio in Charlotte. And if you want exclusive content, like invitations to events, the weekly live stream, my daily show prep with all the links, become a patron, go to thepetecallinershow.com. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, get every episode for free, right to your smartphone or tablet. And again, thank you so much for your support. I mentioned earlier during the discussion about the Mecklenburg County Commission and the Pride Month, and I said we were going to drag some people, and I feel like we did that. I did not mean like the drag shows or drag queens or like anything like that kind of drag. I meant like criticize and mock and ridicule and have some fun with, you know, that kind of stuff. Okay, so now I am going to talk about drag queens, specifically the ability to name three. Because apparently this is a disqualifying thing if you are running for mayor of San Francisco. If you cannot name three drag queens. Not my standard, by the way. I did not come up with this. The Democrat Party's mayor debate in San Francisco, a city racked by property crime, homelessness, and a terminal decline in downtown business occupancy, is threatening to destroy the city's finances and livability. All of that stuff really doesn't matter. What matters is the mic drop moment that Mayor London Breed had fighting to keep her job. She asked her opponent a gotcha question. Name three drag queens. Boom. Uh-huh. This is, yeah. Oh yeah. Can you name three drag queens? If you can't name three drag queens, then I don't think you're fit to be mayor, San Francisco. Which, by the way, I feel like I could now be mayor of San Francisco because off the top of my head, I've got RuPaul, Tootsie, and J. Edgar Hoover. It's three right there. Boom. Right. I could be mayor. I'm going to turn this city around now. Well, I mean, I don't live there, so that's a slight problem. You probably have to resign. Well, you probably don't, actually. What am I thinking? They probably did away with a residency requirement. David Strom at hotair.com, he says, is it any wonder that San Francisco is bleeding residents? San Francisco has almost everything going for it, except San Franciscans, of course. That's... It is arguably the most beautiful city in America, blessed by a pleasant climate, extraordinary location, wealth beyond imagination, and a diverse population in a good way. Unfortunately, the city is run by idiots, and the voters keep voting for the clinically insane. Journalists reporting on crime in the city get robbed. Homeless people, when they are not overdosing on fentanyl, are crapping in the street or assaulting people. Shoplifting has become a team sport, and public transit is crumbling, crime-ridden, and now agency hides videos of criminals in order to prevent racist stereotyping. So they don't even tell you. They will blur out the imagery because racism. We don't need to tell people be on the lookout for this, you know, violent guy that just pushed somebody in front of a train or something. No, because racism. So in the midst of all these crises, including a decline in business property values that threatens to bankrupt the city, the mayor's gotcha question tells you everything that you need to know. Speaking of the homeless, the people experiencing houselessness, this story from the Associated Press out of Atlanta. In a dreary part of downtown Atlanta, shipping containers have been transformed into an oasis of dozens of previously unsheltered people who now proudly call a former parking lot home. The gated micro community. Wait a minute. You're allowed to have gated communities in Atlanta? The reason I ask is because Asheville, when I was up there, Asheville did away with gated communities because racism. But Atlanta, apparently not not fighting the racism by allowing gated communities. I don't know. Seems kind of suspicious, if you ask me, or sus, as the kids would say today. The gated micro community known as the Melody. The Melody is the name of the community. It doesn't look like a parking lot anymore. They put down artificial turf. They got potted plants. They got some red Adirondack chairs. And there's even a dog park there. A bark park. The shipping containers have been divided into 40 insulated studio apartments. These are like the big shipping containers that you see, you know, like the back of an 18-wheeler or on the boat, you know, that like hits the bridge in Baltimore. Like that kind of big shipping container. They've turned them into apartments, studio apartments. It includes a single bed, an HVAC unit, a desk, a microwave, a small fridge, a TV, a sink, and a bathroom. On a recent afternoon, a half dozen residents were chatting around a table in the Melody's smoking area. So this is an interesting concept to me. Maybe San Francisco could look at doing this. Because, you know, one of the problems in San Francisco is that they've got height restrictions. You can't build up. You can't tear, like, all the stuff is historic, or it's like they've got a cap on how high you can go up. And so there's not a lot of land left to develop, if any at all. And so that pushes all of the prices higher. And then when you have the city handing out, I remember I went to San Francisco 2002. I remember because it was the first time that they were making people take their shoes off, and I got flagged because I had a one-way ticket. Anyway, because I'd flown into San Francisco and I was hanging out there with my buddy, and we were going to drive to Vegas, and then he bailed. Classic Johnny, but he bailed. So now I had to go to Vegas, and I was like, should I drive? It's like, look, it's not. And he said, look, I understand you want to drive to Vegas. Everybody always wants to drive to Vegas. He's like, but I could tell you how that goes because I've done it. He's like, you get in the car and you're like, going to Vegas. And you start off and everybody's all excited. And then you get into the desert and you're like, oh, wow, look at this desert. It's really big. And then you're like driving and everybody starts getting kind of, you know, tired. You're still driving. You're driving, and there's just nothing there. You're just in the middle of the desert. It's like really boring, and it's hot. And then you could see Vegas in the distance. And then everybody gets excited again, like, Vegas, Vegas. And then you're still driving. Because you could see it for a really, really long way away, and it just takes like a couple more hours to get there. And the whole time, you're just staring at these lights in the distance. So I was like, well, when you say it that way, yeah, maybe I'll just fly. So he drove me down to Oakland. I got a story about Oakland. He drove me down to Oakland, and I flew to Vegas from there. And that's when they're like, one-way ticket to Vegas. Take off your flip-flops, sir. You may have a bomb. So it was right. It was after 9/11. Did you see the video that they just got on the 9/11 connection to the Saudi government? 60 Minutes got the video. I got that too. Okay. So back then they had these problems at the time. It's a really nice city, I thought, but you know, homeless problems and stuff. But even then they were paying people. They were giving them these stipends. They were giving them bus tickets. And so they were just using them not to leave permanently, but they would get on the bus, they'd go visit somebody and then use the stipend to buy the return ticket. And then they came back. So like you're funding like a whole lifestyle. Anyway. Faced with years of rising homelessness rates and failed solutions, Atlanta city officials... Okay, wait a minute. Failed solutions? I know a thing or two about solutions. That's what we're all about here. There are no failed solutions. That's not a solution, right? There is no such thing as a failed solution because a solution solves the problem. You didn't solve the problem. Therefore, ergo, it is not a solution. You can't fail. Okay. City officials across the U.S. have been embracing rapid housing options, emphasizing three factors: small, quick, and cheap. Officials believe micro-communities, unlike shelters, offer stability that, when combined with wraparound services, can more effectively put residents on the path to secure housing. Denver has opened three of these so-called micro-communities and converted another five hotels for people who used to be homeless. By the way, at some point, if you're going on a building spree, right, you're going to do this like push for all of these types of housing options. Do you create more demand? Right? Like, if you create so much supply that every single person who comes to town is like, I'm homeless, and you're like, okay, here's a place for you. Are you not going to have more and more people drawn to the promise of free shelter? In which case, then, do you ever actually finish building all of the necessary shelter, or are you always going to be in a state of building more shelters, more micro communities? Now, that being said, maybe all the homeless people in America go to Denver, right? If they just never stop building all of these things, well, okay, eventually they will stop building it when the city goes bankrupt, right? That's how that will probably work out. Another failed solution, if you will. All right, so I have a solution, I think. I have a solution with this idea of the micro communities catching on, cities creating like tiny house communities or containers and converting them into studio apartments for the unsheltered, or converting hotels, right? Doing that too. It reminds me of dorm rooms, and that got me thinking, look, we're not using the college campuses to educate kids anymore. So how about we take the colleges and we turn those into micro communities? Huh? Right? All right. Hear me out. Because the cost, get this, let's see. The cost of these things in Denver, micro communities of small cabin-like structures with a twin bed, desk, and closet, like that's a dorm room, right? The city built three of these things with nearly 160 units total. They did it in 6 months at about $25,000 per unit. Well, that's the cost of tuition, right? So if you get rid of the college kids, they're not learning anything anyway, so get rid of them. The places are already built, right? And rather than paying for the colleges, we just pay to keep up with the room and board. We can convert all of the, I mean, keep the dining hall, right? And the student union center with the ping pong tables and stuff. You keep all of that. But like the classrooms, you can convert all of that stuff too, right? Make those into housing units. Conversion of a hotel unit costs about $100,000. Like, I'm already saving you guys money. Kick the college kids out, move the homeless in, and you're going to save the $100,000 reno costs. Boom. On site at the micro community, you got bathrooms, showers, washing machines, dog parks, and kitchens. There you go, right? Same thing at the dorms, right? Programs in Denver and Atlanta take inspiration from similar ones in cities like Columbia, South Carolina, and Savannah, Georgia. They offer a degree of privacy and security not found in congregate shelters or encampments. Now, it is unclear how long these containers are going to last in Atlanta. They don't know. They're hoping 20 years. They were relatively inexpensive, aka cheap. And they already had handicap accessible bathrooms, since a lot of them were used by Georgia hospitals during the COVID-19 pandemic. So it's like the FEMA trailers, like the leftover FEMA trailers. Remember those things that got everybody sick? Yeah. Okay. The project, which took only about 4 months to complete, cost about $125,000 per unit. This is for the containers, the shipping containers in Atlanta. Staffing and security operations cost about $900,000 a year. The city is running a micro city, a micro community, for almost $1 million a year. And that does not apparently count the cost of building the containers. The Melody micro community is the first part of Atlanta Mayor Andre Dickens' target of supplying 500 units of rapid housing on city-owned land by December of 2025. The last count that they did last year, 2023, found 738 unsheltered people. That's far fewer than many other cities, but still an increase over the previous year. So that's what Atlanta is doing. In Oakland, a bit of a problem for their mayor there named Sheng Thao. He's facing a recall vote in the fall. Oh, and also he got raided by the FBI this week. That's usually not helpful to an election campaign, unless you're Donald Trump. That's usually not helpful. They're not saying what it's in connection to. No one's saying. After several hours, agents left the house carrying, agents left the house, left Sheng Thao's house. It turns out Thao's house wasn't the only one in the area that was raided. Three other locations connected to a company called California Waste Solutions, the largest recycling company in Northern California. The best suggestion about what this might have all been about, according to John Sexton at hotair.com, he's quoting the East Bay Times, quote, "A few miles away, law enforcement officials wearing police vests and U.S. Postal Inspection uniforms were seen outside of a house, Skyline Boulevard, tied to a guy named David Duong. One official there declined to comment, but the Duongs have been the subject of an investigation by the city's Ethics Commission since 2020 over the use of straw donors to funnel money into city council candidate campaigns." So that's what the mayor of Oakland's got going on for himself. Gosh, we really, in a city as well-run as Oakland, it's shocking, just shocking that this could develop. Thank you, Wayne. Appreciate it. Thanks for listening. He says, you're crushing it right now, Pete. Colleges as unhoused people places to reside as unhomed people is a great idea. My daughter is a senior this coming year at USC, and after that, my money will be done. Ergo, let whatever happens happen. There you go. Right? Well, I mean, look, you're not even using these things for their original purpose. So who are you to say that my new purpose is worse than your new purpose? Are you saying you're against sheltering the homeless? Sorry. The people experiencing unhousedness? Are you? No, you can't say that. All right, this story from the Boston Herald. A video posted by 60 Minutes is part of a lawsuit that 9/11 families are waging against Saudi Arabia for allegedly aiding some of the Al-Qaeda hijackers. A hearing in the case is set for July 11th in federal court in Manhattan. The video is a key piece of evidence made public this week that could help finally expose the level of involvement Saudi Arabia may have had in the terror attacks. It's a home video. It's on VHS, and the guy behind the camera, according to 60 Minutes, and alleged in the court documents, is a guy by the name of Omar al-Bayoumi, who was then working for Saudi intelligence, according to the FBI. The video shows a man speaking in Arabic as he tours the capital in the summer of 1999. There are timestamps, footage of exits and entrances to Congress. He shows the model of the building, shows nearby landmarks, including the Washington Monument, which, like, that's a guidepost. If you're flying into D.C., you see that thing, you know exactly as it lines up with the Capitol. The video taken in late June and early July of 1999, the plan to attack America using hijacked jets, was hatched soon after, with Osama bin Laden and suspected architect of the 9/11 attacks, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who was being held in Gitmo awaiting a military tribunal, backing the idea at that time. Bayoumi, the guy in the video, the alleged Saudi intelligence, has been linked to Nawaf al-Hazmi and Khalid al-Midar. I don't know if you say the M that it may just be Mikhtar. Anyway, the first 9/11 hijackers to set up shop in America after landing in L.A., that's who these two guys were. And he's apparently been linked to those two guys. According to multiple reports, Bayoumi and another Saudi official named Fahad al-Thumari are accused of assisting them Again, this is according to the court documents. The Saudi government's latest appeal in court states that no government officials, senior or otherwise, gave any direction to Omar al-Bayoumi or Fahad al-Thumari to assist 9/11 hijackers. Okay, so there's a couple of weasel words there, right? You didn't give any direction. Okay, but if you gave them some helpful videos, that's not directing them. That's just doing them a solid, right? And it would indicate an awareness of a plan. Oh, which, by the way, he says in one of the videos, he calls it the plan. So, yeah, sounds like he knew what was being planned. He knew something about the plan. He knew enough to shoot video of the Capitol and the monuments and the exits and entrances and all of that and send it along and say something, the plan. He says any contact that the Saudis had was, quote, innocent motives to help fellow Saudis new to San Diego. See, because that's what, when you arrive in San Diego, as the two hijackers did when they got there, it's very helpful to know the layout of the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. I mean, duh. Like, that's part of all of the orientation videos at the southern border, too. When the, you know, people come across the border and they're like, you know, Allahu Akbar, death to America, we hate the Jews, like, we, you know, all of that. They're like, okay, well, here you go. Here's your orientation video for the U.S. Capitol. Go make your voices heard, right? If the judge allows the case to proceed, the 9/11 families, there's like 10,000 plaintiffs who either lost loved ones in the 9/11 attacks, and also those who are dying from cancer because they worked on the pile, quote unquote, ground zero, then this means those plaintiffs will be able to expand discovery in the case. That means Al-Qaeda cells in Boston, Portland, Maine, Phoenix, Florida, and New Jersey can also be investigated fully with this new knowledge. That now opens up all of these different terror cells. I don't even know, like, there may still be some of these cells operating in these cities. Did you just hear my previous remarks about the southern border? Yeah, so that's possible. If the timeline on this works out, like, we could see a point where we finally get the full story on the Saudi involvement in 9/11 just in time for another 9/11 type attack, right? Or we get another attack and then this one gets kind of buried because the next one is going to be like way worse, you know? Yeah, so we'll see. It's being held, this trial is being held up in Manhattan, but it's a federal case, so that means Alvin Bragg has inserted himself as the local DA into the case there. I'm kidding, he has not. Oh, but speaking of Alvin Bragg, did you hear he's dropping the hammer on the Columbia University protesters who took over the administrative building and ransacked the place, remember, and like held hostage the janitor. And by dropping the hammer, I mean he's dropping the charges in a complete shock to nobody. Okay, if you're listening to this podcast, you are obviously paying attention to the world around us. You also have really great taste, I might add. But if you haven't started getting prepared for various emergencies, I got to ask, what are you waiting for? Please call my friends Bill and Jan at Carolina Readiness Supply, and they'll help get you started. If you have no idea how to start, they can help you. If you're an experienced prepper, they can help you too. Being prepared is just smart. We've already established that you're smart. I mean, you listen to this podcast after all. So let's put those smarts into action. Go to CarolinaReadiness.com. That's CarolinaReadiness.com or call them at 828-226-7239. Carolina Readiness Supply has 2,000 square feet of supplies as well as educational materials that you're going to need for any kind of emergency. Veteran-owned Carolina Readiness Supply. Will you be ready when the lights go out? The Manhattan District Attorney's Office is dropping charges against more than two dozen protesters arrested for ransacking a campus building at Columbia University during the height of its anti-Jew protest encampment. Sorry, anti-Israel, but whatever, same thing. Manhattan prosecutors said at a court hearing yesterday that more than 30 protesters would not be prosecuted on misdemeanor trespassing charges for storming Columbia's Hamilton Hall. Protesters, you see, covered the security cameras inside Hamilton Hall when they took control of it. That contributed to a lack of evidence showing any identifiable individuals committing property damage. Could it be that they were wearing masks or scarves of some kind, and maybe that those accessories may have been used to aid and abet their criminality? Maybe we might consider some sort of a rule against wearing the facial obscuring garments. Just an idea. The DA's office offered to drop charges against 13 other protesters if they are not arrested again in the next 6 months. This was a promise that they could not agree to, though, and so none of them accepted their proposal. I cannot trust myself not to get arrested again in the next 6 months, right? I mean, I might have to take to the streets for climate justice or something, right? There may be a police-involved shooting somewhere in America that, like, I get the message on the bat phone and I got to go out, got to cover up my face and got to go vandalize some stuff. Inside the courtroom, some of the protesters covered their faces with masks and keffiyehs. They did it in the courtroom, a common practice among demonstrators on college campuses across the country. This is, by the way, a report at National Review by James Lynch. The lone remaining defendant from the Hamilton Hall occupation is an outside anarchist named James Carlson, a Scion. My wife drove a Scion. Anyway, a scion to an advertising fortune with a long history of agitation, or as I call it, destabilization, right? That's what he is. He's a destabilizer. He's not actually an anarchist. They are temporary anarchists. They're LARPers, live action role players. They just want anarchy for a little bit of time so then they can offer you the promise of order with them in charge. That's how that goes. So they're temporary anarchists. Carlson is being accused of setting an Israeli flag on fire and destroying a police camera in a holding cell following his arrest at Hamilton Hall. Well, I kind of think they've got you on video doing that, buddy, so that might be a bit harder to beat the rap on that. But it is Alvin Bragg, so he could very well drop those charges against you too. In a viral photograph, a Columbia maintenance man inside Hamilton Hall can be seen pushing Carlson against a wall and grabbing his hoodie. The janitor later said he was simply trying to protect the building when the protesters stormed into it. So Alvin Bragg, he will make up new legal theories to get Trump, but he will let these criminals go free. Oh, speaking of crap attorneys, there's an Ohio attorney who has been disciplined for pooping in a Pringles can and then tossing it into a parking lot. He had his law license reinstated in Ohio, Noble County, of all places, Noble County. The guy's name is Jack Blakesley. All right, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I could not do the show without your support and the support of the businesses that advertise on the podcast. So if you'd like, please support them too and tell them you heard it here. You can also become a patron at my Patreon page or go to thepetecallinershow.com. Again, thank you so much for listening, and don't break anything while I'm gone.